I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm your host, Mike Madison, 2 hours a day, 9 to 11 o'clock today. From 10 to 11 o'clock, we'll have Starla Brown in with Americans for Prosperity, see what they're working on. I believe they were doing some political activism this past weekend and got more planned, particularly here for the state of Mississippi, how people can get engaged. And so this is, everybody's looking for solutions. You talk show hosts, you talk a lot, but you don't provide any solutions. Well, we've got an organization here that's in the fight. So if you want to join up, if you want to be part of the solution, Americans for Prosperity is a great place to start. So we will talk to Starla next hour. Quotes of the day today, leading into some criticism of one of the two major political parties. Quote of the day today, I love this one. I don't think I've ever seen this one before. George Bernard Shaw. I'm somebody who can learn, I told you. A friend of mine at the gym had heard my show where I had announced a quote of the day by George Bernard Shaw, and he told me, no, it's Bernard. So I've taken in that new information, changed what I did. I learned something, and now I'm using it. As George Bernard Shaw said, the longer I live, the more convinced I am that this planet is used by other planets as a lunatic asylum. The longer I live, the more convinced I am that this planet is used by other planets as a lunatic asylum. I doubt I get much argument on that one. Good quote. I wanted to do what I've been doing recently, as the Libertarian Party has been taken over by some sane people, the Ron Paulian wing. Here's a tweet. I mean, I kind of like doing these to juxtapose. Now, I guess I should be following the Democrat Party's Twitter feed, but we almost know what we're going to get. Gun control, Roe v. Wade, climate crisis. You know, people are spontaneously combusting. I should probably do it to really flesh it out. But again, I talk about it. If I've got to do 2 hours a day telling everybody how bad Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and the Democrat Party are, I think you're already there. I don't think I'm really bringing anything new. But I do like to juxtapose the Republican Party versus the Libertarian Party. Because I was a member of the Republican Party. I think I'm still a registered Republican. I keep meaning to check into this and see. But anyway, here's what the Libertarian Party tweeted out, the new and improved Libertarian Party. Never let a good crisis go to waste has been the doctrine of tyrants since the dawn of time. Your rights do not vanish simply because the state declares a health, gun, war, or climate crisis. Only authoritarians allege otherwise. Let me say this again. This is the Libertarian Party sending out a tweet for the day. Never let a good crisis go to waste has been the doctrine of tyrants since the dawn of time. Your rights do not vanish simply because the state declares a health, gun, war, or climate crisis. Only authoritarians allege otherwise. Just another message from the Libertarian Party, to which I say, amen. Here's what the GOP tweeted out. Joe Biden's war on American energy has already taxed families $1,500. American families are $1,500 poorer because of him. It's true. It's a true statement. I mean, I don't know the actual dollar figures. I'm sure they've done some calculation. If anything, it might seem low. They're exactly right. Joe Biden has contributed significantly to in any energy crisis that we go through here, both with his domestic drilling policies, his support of the Ukraine war, the sanctioning of Russia, other sanctions that have been around for forever. So this is true. It's the lies, or lies, that's a weird word. The sins of omission with the Republican Party, because they're right. They're right. American families are taking it on the chin. $1,500 a year. American families are $1,500 a year poorer because of Joe Biden and his energy policies. No argument here. I told you a couple of days ago, we're now spending over $500 billion a year in interest on the U.S. debt. Everybody listening understands that it has been both Republicans and Democrats who have created this debt. Democrats largely through the welfare state, Republicans largely through the warfare state, but we've ended up with the debt nonetheless, and we're now spending over $500 billion a year just in interest on the debt. That is 3,300 a taxpayer. This is some rough math. It's actually a little higher than that. I had calculated American taxpayers at $155 million. It's actually somewhere closer to $150 million. So I'm being a little conservative with these numbers. So what the Republicans leave out is that we're paying, for an American family with two working taxpaying parents, it's $6,600 a year each and every year. How about the war on terror that the GOP has been running for the past 20 years? Last we heard, the cost for the war on terror, the endless wars, the warfare state that the GOP has been pumping out there, the last we heard was the cost was around $8 trillion. So I did a little bit of math, and that's about $52,000 per taxpayer. A little north of $100,000 per working couple here in the United States. So they're not wrong. They're not wrong about Joe Biden tagging Americans for extra money at the pump. No doubt about it. They are dead on right. It's just what they leave out. This is my problem with the two-party system that is just each pointing fingers at the left and never letting their own constituents know of their own sins. It's strange that they don't mention these things, isn't it? But it is the lies of omission that I find are so incredibly dishonest. I also wanted to finish up. This is a kind of a shocker to me. I'm not a huge Steve Bannon fan. I don't really necessarily have anything against him. He's a Goldman Sachs guy. That kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies. And he's a bit of a political operative, but he is a very, very smart guy. Something about him kind of creeps me out. I'm still wondering if he pocketed money from that We Build the Wall campaign. You know, I think he was indicted for this. I'm fully aware of our massively corrupt judicial system, but could have been a political indictment. But it just, I don't know. There's just something, you know, it's a gut instinct. Steve Bannon, I just don't know if a lot of what he does is not for himself. Now, he does a lot of good work on pandemic-related issues and vaccine-related issues, on the war room. He has Naomi Wolf, a famous progressive liberal who has awoken to what has gone on, and she's been very fascinating to watch for the past year. And so Steve Bannon does some good work, and I know a lot of people love Steve Bannon because he was a Trump guy. It probably should give him some credibility that he was run out of the Trump administration relatively soon as Trump brought in all of the warmongers and establishment swamp creatures. Steve Bannon was escorted out. So maybe this should give him some credibility in my eyes. But he is a very smart guy. He's not ever made a quote of the day today, but I ran across this clip this morning. This was him appearing on Frontline on PBS. And he knocks it out of the park with this one.
We've essentially put the burden on the bailout on the working class and middle class. That's why nobody owns anything.
Right.
But the millennials today are nothing but 19th century Russian serfs. They're better fed. They're better clothed. They're in better shape. They have more information than anybody in the world at any point in time. But they don't own anything. They're not going to own anything. Okay, and they're 20%. If you mark in time against their parents, they're 20% behind in their income. And there's no pension plan in the future. They're all gig economy. We've literally destroyed the middle class in this country.
Okay.
And both political parties. By the way, this is not about Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
This is the way the system works, and this is the way the system comes together.
Yeah, he's dead on right. And I think we should all keep this in the back of our mind. Exactly what we have done to this generation as we look across the landscape, and we just can't understand why they're calling for socialism and communism. Why are they so ripe for these bizarre failed ideologies. Well, could it be? Could it possibly be that the boomers, the Gen Xers, the adults, air quotes here in the studio, the adults in the room for the past couple of decades have allowed this country to be hollowed out for the middle class, so these kids are up against it, don't have the opportunities, don't have the path to the American dream that generations before them did? Could it possibly be that it's maybe a little bit of our fault that these kids are seeing these things? But he's dead on right. We have destroyed the middle class in this country, and these millennials are nothing but serfs. And they realize it, and they're lashing out against it. They don't understand enough to know what they're asking for doesn't work. That comes with age and some level of wisdom, but I do not blame any millennial, any Gen Zer out there for complaining. They have every right to, and they should be mad at all of us, older folk. And this was just kind of funny to kind of dovetail on this. The Wall Street Journal. I want to ask you, when have you heard this before? Wall Street Journal recently wrote a piece. It says high mortgage rates are pushing some home buyers to choose adjustable rate mortgages over fixed rate loans to keep monthly costs down. Here are some scenarios where financial advisors say they might be worth considering. Where have we heard that before? No, there's nothing to see here in the mortgage market. Everything's going great. There may possibly be a small recession sometime next year is what they tell us. Everything's going great. The job market's going great. We got the Wall Street Journal out there hawking adjustable rate mortgages again. Holy cow, we do not learn our lesson, do we? I'll be right back. I have a much more difficult sales hurdle to leap with this show than most conservative talk show hosts. I'm aware of this. Really, what I ask conservatives to do is, conservatives are so busy right now fighting off the left, which I totally understand. The left must be defeated. They must be thwarted. I almost think that ignoring them, I believe that most of the big issues that are thrown in front of our faces are actually very marginal issues used to distract us and divide us. Now, I know the trans stuff is getting in the schools. That seems like that should be easy to swat down. It's not, strangely enough, but it's because parents have been disengaged with school boards for so long, not really demanded accountability at those levels, and now it's just gotten to a point where you can't sit by anymore. But my message to conservatives that makes this show probably a tougher sell is that you need to do that and then fix the other stuff too. Now, I saw a guy, I've talked about this video two or three times now, saw a guy the other day juggling Rubik's Cubes. And as he was juggling them, as they were hitting his hands, he was twisting them and solving three Rubik's Cubes at once. It took him 3 minutes, 43 seconds, I think, of juggling three unsolved Rubik's Cubes to have them all solved. It's amazing. This is really what I believe conservatives need to do. Now, the left needs to do this too, but I don't have probably a lot of left-leaning listeners, hopefully some. But, you know, that's a tough sell to conservatives, and I'm going to talk a little bit. So I challenge a lot of the stuff that is supposedly right and so-called conservative. I'm lost in some of these labels, but I do understand that I'm asking for both. You know, the right is so busy fighting off the left, but what happens is, what I see in this country is, you fight like hell, you defeat Hillary Clinton, you elect Donald Trump, and everybody sits on their can for 4 years. And there's still work to be done. It's tireless, but again, it's one of these things, it's much like if you go deep into debt. I mean, you got to work really hard. There's just not a whole lot of days off if you try to dig yourself out of debt. I've done these things. And you just can't, you know, you don't get to enjoy the weekends while you're still in the crisis. And that's really where we are socially, economically here. And I'm just imploring people to pay attention to both things at the same time. Maybe we need to divide into camps. Got certain people that challenge the left, and that's their issue. And there's certain people who try to fix things on the right. That would be their issue to actually restore some freedom. More about that in just a second. But it's my apologies if I'm trying to convince you to do too much. To be honest with you, I'm just putting my thoughts out there, and I'm probably going to be on the sidelines, maybe in another country when this all comes down. That's probably not the most patriotic thing I've ever said on this show, but I got to tell you, I mean, you know, I think Bernard Shaw is right. This planet has just become a lunatic asylum for other planets, apparently. But anyway, I wanted to get into a couple of things. I want to get into some COVID stuff. There's really some pretty amazing things going on around the world, and including, I believe it's a German health minister has come out and said something. Yeah, the German Federal Ministry of Health. Where do you get a load of the statistic? I mean, other countries are starting to become honest about what's exactly gone on during COVID and what's going on right now with this mass experimentation on humankind. You might remember it by Operation Warp Speed. And we want to reelect that guy. That's unbelievable to me. Anyway, I wanted to get into this. There's a story, and again, I'm telling you, I ask for a lot here on this show, and I challenge a lot of stuff. I did a show the other day. I called it my kamikaze show, where I went after military spending, Republican Party, Toby Keith's patriotic song, Donald Trump himself. I went after a lot of things. I'm dissuaded, and I'm kind of motivated. You know, I do get kind letters from listeners. I even had one. Thank you, Shane, that complimented my musical taste. I've included some new bump music in this show recently. I knew mine was getting kind of stale. It's kind of funny. Jameson and I talk about some of the same things here. He and I can carry on a conversation and agree on a lot. We disagree on several things as well. That's fine. I like Jameson. He pretends to like me, at least. I mean, he might like me, but he pretends. He's very cordial. We get along great. It's just funny when I listen to the shows. He's a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll. There's that distinction there. But I did get some compliments in my bump music as well. So that's always good. But I also, I was looking. I talk a lot about Jimmy Dore. He's a very progressive leftist guy. I'm going to read you the titles of his podcast. And I think he's kind of my... He's the yin to my yang and what kind of inspires me to continue to do this kind of material. Jimmy Dore talks largely to a left-leaning audience because he himself is a progressive guy. He was a Bernie guy before he realized, woke up to the fact that Bernie was corrupt. He was a guy, he supported the squad, AOC and the rest of them. I know, I don't understand it either, but he did. But now he's woken up to the fact that they are equally corrupt. He took his... vaccine, dutifully took his vaccine as a member of the left, had a bad reaction, and now was woken up to that whole scam. And so he's very similar to me, is that he lashes out, and he's very popular. So it's kind of encouraging to me that maybe there's an audience for a leftist to attack the left from the left and a libertarian to attack the right from the right. He and I are kind of fellow travelers. Here is Jimmy Dore talking to a left-wing audience. And he's popular. I'm sure he's just kind of lost a lot of people, or more and more people are waking up. Jimmy Dore's trying to wake up his side. I'm trying to wake up my side. And he and I could probably sit down and have a great conversation and disagree about some stuff. Here's Jimmy Dore's podcast. Hunter Biden should be in prison, says Joe Biden. He's talking about the fact he plays the clip of Joe Biden basically saying, if you've got a piece of crack the size of the tip of your little finger, you're in jail for 5 years, 10 years. You are no longer able to walk about society. I mean, just the glaring hypocrisy of the dad of a crackhead son. The author of the crime bill. Yeah, I mean, Joe Biden just, as bad as he is now, when you start to go back and look at his record, understand it's 40 years of badness. It's just badness and embarrassment at this point. Jimmy Dore also does Dems illegally kick third party off the ballot in North Carolina. Here's one. This is the left wing Jimmy Dore. He's got an episode where he says Trump never lunged for steering wheel. He's debunking this media thing where Trump lunged at the steering wheel, grabbed a Secret Service guy by the throat. The Secret Service has denied this, said it never happened. And Jimmy Dore from the left is trying to tell the left, these are lies, people. Here he's got one, lockdowns actually saved shockingly few people. And it goes on and on and on. So I get emboldened, you know, Jimmy Dore's been very successful attacking the left, basically from the left and from some level of common sense and sanity. He still believes in socialized medicine, which I'd love to debate him on and sit down and have a cup of coffee with him. Well, beer sounds better, but it does embolden me to understand that maybe people can think beyond just the two-party stuff. Well, I'm going to test that when we come back. There's a story about the understaffed police around the country. Apparently has become quite the crisis. I'm sure people on the right are fully aware of this, although I have a different prescription for how we should tackle this issue than probably most people on conservative talk radio. I'll do that when we come back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me. Next hour, Starla Brown with Americans for Prosperity will be in to chat. So, minutes ago, it's reported that Joe Biden has come down with COVID. Is there any place I can get a bet in how long the over-under, or has it already been released, the tweet that says, symptoms are mild, thank God I got the vaccine. This is double-shotted, double-boosted COVID. I hope they are quarantining all of these kids that he's been sniffing recently. That can't be good. Have that man loitering around your neck region for extended periods of time. But anyway, any minute now, he will credit the vaccine for saving his life. Or is this the Democrats taking him out? I saw something about the cancer thing yesterday. I haven't looked it up. Was it a flub or was he admitting something? Look, they are taking him out. Very disappointed they didn't do it to meet my May prediction of his exiting office. That was a stain on my record here on the show, which I think is pretty decent. But they're moving to take him out, and what follows will be even more entertaining than the part of him taking him out, how they try to jockey and get somebody who is not completely repulsive to about 80% of the country. Kamala Harris is repulsive to that 80%. So they've got a lot of work to do. They've created quite the mess for themselves. We'll see how it works out. But is this the COVID kill shot that the Democrats have got to try to remove this man prior to the midterms? We will see. I want to touch on this real quick, and then I want to get into some COVID stuff. Because the rest of the world is wildly more honest than the United States is in their reporting, in their statistics, in their statements. Of course, we're led to believe that what's happening in other countries isn't happening here because we're somehow genetically different human beings. So anyway, we'll talk about that. But I wanted to just touch on this story. Maybe it's that compulsion inside of me that says, this will be an unpopular segment. You definitely should do that one, Mike. There's a story about the critical understaffing of police departments across the country. This is a Zero Hedge article. It's critical. Police departments across the U.S. struggling with staffing shortages after years of supporting BLM activists who succeeded in defunding police departments in major American cities. CNN is now reporting there are critical staffing shortages in precincts across the country. Police departments from Atlanta to Kansas City to Portland are coping with critical staffing shortages and struggling to fill their ranks from patrol officers to 9/11 operators as the warm weather historically portends bursts of violence in many parts of the United States. That's according to CNN. And the story goes through all the very legitimate complaints of police and police departments of dealing with some of these woke city councils, woke mayor's offices that have really thrown their police departments under the bus, have painted them as the bad guys and tried to take money from them. Now, I believe police funding actually has really not been that dramatically affected. There was a large exodus of a lot of cops based on vaccine requirements. That was one of the things. And obviously, it became very difficult as they tried to whip up hostility against the police in some of these neighborhoods. I mean, why the hell would you go do that job? It's not exactly a great paying job. You can actually go do something productive with your life. Here we go. I'm tiptoeing into my unpopular part of this segment. But the story just goes into a lot of different reasons and the different cities. Of course, it's the usual suspects. It's Dallas. It's Atlanta. It's Seattle. A lot of these more woke liberal cities are experiencing the worst effects of what's happening with the police departments, and it's manifesting itself in a lot of violent crime and property crime. Here's the Mike Madison solution, though. Maybe it's not the staffing levels that's really necessarily the problem. These are large bureaucracies. It's almost like schools. There's a lot of administration. There's a lot of moving parts. We've spent an awful lot of money on law enforcement. I'm a law and order guy. If somebody is robbing you, assaulting you, attacking you, has been found guilty of murder, we libertarians say take those people off the street. Anyone that violates your rights is committing a crime. But maybe, I'm just proposing a possible different solution, because I don't know you're going to really staff the ranks always up to the number of people that they say they need. But maybe if the police spent their time only focusing on so-called crimes where there's actually a victim. Now, this is, yes, it's part of my anti-war on drugs here. Not a proponent of drugs. There's, you know, I'm going to read some stuff from Alex Berenson later. Alex Berenson has done a lot of work talking about the negative effects of extended marijuana use. I don't disagree with that at all, particularly for our youth. If you've got a young child, they do not need to be smoking marijuana as their brain is developing. I think it's very dangerous for youth. My problem is that what we have done is criminalized a personal behavior in this country, and it's not working. But can you imagine the thousands of hours each month of man hours that could be freed up with police if they weren't out issuing tickets for seat belts? There you go. We take all the seatbelt violations that cops have been ticketing people for. You got to pull them over. You got to issue a ticket. Don't pay it. You got to go to court. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole thing around you not putting on a seatbelt because the police believe you are too stupid to take care of yourself, as do the politicians who pass these laws. No more. What if they didn't do arrests for unapproved plants somewhere? Then, yes, I'm talking about everything from marijuana to cocaine to heroin to whatever. This is a big leap for a lot of people. Well, you had me at marijuana, and then you lost me when you said cocaine and heroin, Mike. Basically, some politicians got together and decided that these plants were no good. You can't smoke a plant. You can't snort a plant. You can ferment and drink as many plants as you want in terms of any kind of alcohol. But we will not allow you to actually smoke or grind up a plant. But what if they didn't do that? What if the cops did not do any more busting down doors for raw milk farmers? That would save a little bit of time. The amount of time and effort that goes into civil asset forfeiture, where the police pull somebody over who, you know, may have been speeding a little bit, and then they find a lot of money in their car, and they just sit there on the side of the road for hours as they decide whether or not they're going to steal from that citizen, take all of their stuff, leave them stranded on the side of the road, go to court to defend this. That would free up a bunch of man hours if they decided not to just arbitrarily take stuff from people on a suspicion of a crime that's never even followed up on. If the police weren't responsible for things like code enforcement and bossing people around in their own areas. I'm just saying there's a whole lot of things. If we really have got a policing crisis going on, maybe we could free the cops up to do the heroic work that cops do on a daily basis, but just only do that work. That would be the work of patrolling the streets, having a presence there, making sure that no one is acting violently against anybody else, that nobody's coming in and taking your stuff, breaking into stores, robbing clerks, taking property from other people who rightfully own it. There is a whole lot of actual, just honest, honorable work that the police do, but they are spending so much of their time doing the other stuff that it does take a whole lot of police to enforce all of these laws. And I will remind you, every single law, every single regulation that is passed is always done at the point of a gun. And usually that gun comes from somebody in law enforcement. Now, you may think that sounds extreme, but let's just say you don't let the tax collector into your office every year when they come in to take an inventory of all your private property and then send you a tax bill on it. What if you just decide to tell them, go take a flying leap? I used my after-tax money to buy this stuff. And now I'm using it to run my business. You don't get to come in and tax me on it every single year. It's a small issue. Those bills are usually, for a small business, pretty small, maybe a couple $100. But what if you just decided to say, enough already, quit taxing me on stuff you keep taxing me on. I paid taxes before I used the money. Then when I bought it, I paid taxes. And now every year you're going to come into my office and give me another tax bill on stuff that I already own. I'm not paying this. Guess what happens? If you ignore that long enough, then law enforcement gets involved, and that you will find yourself, if you continue to not cooperate with these regulations, these codes, these taxes, eventually you find yourself at the receiving end of a gun, of a law enforcement gun. I'm just saying. I don't blame police for quitting en masse, particularly in these woke cities. Got to be a just really horrific job, and many good cops out there that really do just want to protect people and maybe serve their community, but they need to stop. Enough of the just enforcing rules because politicians got into a room and made a decision. If they were tasked with only responding to violent crimes, property crimes, actually investigating crimes where there was a victim involved, I guarantee you, you could do with a hell of a lot fewer cops. We'll be right back.
At first I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so
all right, I could hear it here in the studio. I could hear it from beyond the studio windows here. All right, Mike, you had me with the spending. I agree with you there and the corruption in the establishment Republican Party and the how bad Biden is and the shot. Yeah, you had me there. And then you went after our boys in blue. And that's when you lost me. The heroic police force we have. Well, you get no arguments with me. Police do heroic work every single day. I just want them focusing on that heroic work and not doing the rest of carrying out the orders of the state. Now, this is not the best audio clip, but I think you'll get the picture. I'll narrate what I need to on here. It's about a minute long. I'm going to tell you how you could free up some man hours at the police level. This is a video that's out there now. It came off of one of the Ring surveillance tools at someone's house where you got three police approaching a guy's house. They got word that he bought two guns. They just want to check and make sure he still got those guns. Because there's been a rise in violence, and they've had problems with straw purchasers out there. And so the cop is very polite here. And he basically just says, hey, just comply, and we'll be out of here. It won't take but a second. Just go inside, bring out your guns, show us that you still have these guns. There's one police officer on the porch at the door. I think there's actually two. I think there's one out of camera range here. And then there's two more kind of out in the yard, you know, spaced out in case it goes down with this citizen who bought two guns.
Sir.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I'm doing is verifying that you have it. You got two different purchases.
Okay.
If you have them, I'm out of here. See? That's how quick it is.
Yeah.
Just
comply. Just show us your personal property. You know, you got a Second Amendment right. We may let you keep it. You just prove it to us that you're doing it the right way. This guy's not accused of any crime. It's just he showed up. He showed him a piece of paper. We see that you bought two guns. We want to make sure that you got both guns.
Have them with you by any chance? Are they?
If
you can unload them and bring them out, or you can go out to your foyer here, check them out, by number, serial number, and we're out of here.
That's it?
Yep.
That's it. It'll take 5 seconds.
The reason we're out here is we're obviously gun violence has been an uptick, so we want to make sure we've been having a lot of issues with straw purchases. So one of the things we indicators that we get is somebody makes like a large gun purchase, and then a lot of times we've been there like, oh, those guns got taken. We're like,
So the idea is when you purchase more than two guns at a time, it generates a multiple sale report.
Huh.
And it comes to us and we have to check them out.
Okay.
That's all that is. You did nothing wrong. Did absolutely zero. I noticed that you were stopped in Philly, though, right, with one of your guns?
Yeah, there you go. You've done absolutely nothing wrong. But it doesn't stop three or four of us from showing up on your porch and demanding that you show us those weapons. Prove to us that you have not committed a crime. Oh, well, we're not accusing you of a crime. You're not in any trouble right now. We're just looking to see if you did commit a crime. I'm just saying, if we've got police staffing shortages around the country, one way to address that is to maybe, you know, take away some of these tasks from them. All right, COVID stuff. Let's see if I can get into this real quick. Because this is interesting. Germany, this morning, or this is actually yesterday morning, the German Federal Ministry of Health posted a stunning tweet admitting that one out of every 5,000 COVID jabs cause, quote, serious side effects. The German Federal Ministry of Health posted a tweet admitting that one out of every 5,000 COVID jabs cause, quote, serious side effects, unquote. Huh. in the United States, they're safe and effective. It must be something about our geography. Man, these shots must be reacting to whatever latitude and longitude is going on in Germany, because here, Thomas Dobbs, pediatricians across the land, Anthony Fauci, Joe Biden, the CDC, the FDA, they're all safe and effective here. What could those Germans be doing wrong? Australia is also having a weird thing go on. It's very strange. There's a great piece out by Alex Berenson. I do suggest people follow him on Substack. And now on Twitter, he has won his lawsuit and been reinstated to Twitter. But he has been on this vaccine lockdown, the whole COVID regime. And he's done a great piece on the 16th of July. He just says, we need to talk about Australia. He starts off, and this piece is long, don't have time to get into the whole thing. He says, Australia should have been the world's ultimate public health and COVID vaccine success story. The nail in the coffin for Team Reality and the Great Barrington Declaration. Australia did just what the Gates-funded gurus wanted. It locked down early and hard and stayed that way for almost 2 years. Closed its borders, responded to local outbreaks with even tougher restrictions. Australian police... Australian police, they'd never do that here, Mike. Australian police used drones and automated license plate readers to check if people were more than a few miles from their homes. The restrictions largely, air quotes here in the studio, worked. That's putting aside all of the mental health problems and the cost of civil liberties and everything else that they gave up, all the rights Australians gave up, but they really had very few COVID deaths in Australia. They just had to completely suspend their lives for 2 years. How's that working out now? The New York Times and other mainstream media here, here's a headline from one of them here, how Australia saved thousands of lives while COVID killed a million Americans. The United States and Australia share similar demographics, but their pandemic death rates point to a very different culture of trust. How's it going now? Here's a headline from the UK Daily Mail. Not just another wave, Australia's COVID hospitalizations reach record levels in several states. Hospitals across the country are, quote, this is in Australia now, after they gave up their lives for 2 years and almost all of them submitted to the experimental gene therapy. So this is odd. Hospitals across the country are, quote, bursting at the seams, unquote, as the number of people being admitted with COVID-19 reaches record levels in several states. Of course, Australia's overall COVID death toll relative to the size of its population is still small, but for the last several months, it has had more deaths per capita, and nearly all of those people are vaccinated. Huh. In the last 6 weeks, 656 people have died of COVID in New South Wales, Australia's largest state. More than 85% were vaccinated, and most of them had been boosted. Huh. Huh. Now, what's interesting is this story that I'll tack on to this, too. I probably should have given myself a little bit more time, but here's what they're saying. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet, I don't know, has called for a reduction in the 7-day isolation period, adding that winter influenza virus currently posed a bigger issue than the COVID-19. I'm going to get to a point in a second. He says, in many cases at the moment, the current strand of influenza is more severe than the current strands of COVID. This is what the premier told 2GB Radio. He later added that the state was currently experiencing, quote, one of the worst flu seasons we've ever had, unquote, and urged people to get a flu shot. Huh. Huh. A lot of people that were questioning the efficacy, the sanity of a mass experimental gene therapy on people was unleashing something that they referred to as antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE. We talked about it a lot on the show, but not so much recently. I think it's time to bring it up again. And what ADE was what they found with the ferret studies of mRNA vaccines in the past was that the ferrets really produced a lot of antibodies after they got these shots. And the researchers were slapping high fives. They thought this mRNA was the future. Look at all the antibodies we're getting into these animals. But then another disease came through, just a natural disease. A natural virus came through those bunch of ferrets, and they didn't do so well. Matter of fact, a lot of them started dying. And this originally derailed the original mRNA vaccines prior to COVID. It was this study that showed this antibody-dependent enhancement, meaning that, well, we produced antibodies against this, but it apparently made the ferrets very fragile to other diseases. And many researchers were saying, we don't need to mass inoculate humanity because look what happened when we did it to the ferrets. They were ignored. Now, suddenly, Australia has got the double problem of people being hospitalized and dying from COVID. 85% of them vaccinated, most of them boosted. And now they've got one of the worst flu seasons they've ever had, meaning flu is devastating their people as well. That's another head scratcher, isn't it? What could possibly be making the flu so much more dangerous to Australians these days? Is there anything that could seek to explain such a thing? Just must be happenstance, a coincidence of a bad flu season. No, these people who talked about this antibody-dependent enhancement were right. People who talked about the problems with the vaccine were right. Australia's seeing that now.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. We do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with somebody from Americans for Prosperity, and today we got the Big Cheese. Starla Brown is in with us. Starla, thanks again for coming back.
Sure. Yeah.
Every show I usually start off, I like people, unlike myself, who can be succinct and make a profound point, and so I do a lot of quotes of the day. I don't usually have one for this segment, but in light of recent developments, I wanted to do a quote of the day.
Okay.
This is a quote of the day from the sitting president of the United States, Joe Biden. This was said on July 2021, where he said, quote, "You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations." That was...
Well,
that was the quote. You're not going to get COVID.
As we say on social media, that didn't age well.
I'm telling you. Oh, my gosh. So the speculation is, particularly here around the station and stuff, I know this isn't in your ballywick, but, you know, I think the Democrats know they need to abandon the sinking ship that is Joe Biden. And you know, it's COVID. He said he's got mild symptoms. He is an older guy. Then I saw in here that he's begun taking Paxlovid, which is this Pfizer medication that has been shown to have some pretty remarkable rebound effects. Even Anthony Fauci took Paxlovid, and within 3 days, he had a significant disease. So this may be it. We may be witnessing the slow motion takeout of Joe Biden right here. So,
well, you know, I guess at the very least, it keeps him off any campaign trails, right?
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You and I were chatting a little bit before the segment. I was in Tennessee last week with our team there, and one of our sister partners in the network is working there, talking to voters at their door. And I found something really interesting. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. It's not foreign to me to be at somebody's doorstep, you know, asking them about issues or talking about policy or, you know, even at times, you know, a get out the vote type scenario. And what was interesting to me is people a lot, and I'm not just seeing this in Tennessee. I'm seeing this in some phone calls made in other states and been chatting with, you know, some of our team members. But, you know, and I'm not backing this up with any data right now. I can certainly, you know, go pull that as an organization. But in some of the conversations I personally have had, that sort of unsure voter, right? Not sure yet, because, you know, there's a lot of primaries coming up a week from Tuesday, right? And that week, the first week of August, we've got a lot of primaries around the country. And what I'm hearing from people is, you know, they're appreciative of the information I might be sharing about a particular individual, but they're not sure because they're doing their homework. And I'm hearing a lot of people say directly to me, you know, especially these heavy primaries where there's a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
They are doing their homework. And if you're looking at a, you know, what we used to call sort of the low information voter, but maybe they're someone, you know, identified more as conservative, right? Or identified, you know, leaning, you know, right of center and further. They're really putting these people through a thorough investigation of what they're saying. Yeah. They're not just watching, you know, the back and forth hit pieces on television commercials, like you're bad at this and he's bad at that,
yeah,
or she's bad at this, right? They're not just taking that information anymore, and it's almost like they've wised up to the. A little bit to the negativity of some of the, you know, things you get in the mail or things you see on television, and saying, okay, I'm going to go investigate this actual item and see how true it is. So, you know, you can accuse someone of being a certain thing or taking a certain vote, but there could be extenuating circumstances around that.
And I
just find that interesting that, you know, because I'm talking to people who are in their 80s saying this, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm talking to people, you know, obviously people younger than that as well, but they're doing their due diligence. And I find that interesting. I also find it hopeful, and because hopefully if they are voting their beliefs and their values, they're going to, you know, do enough research to draw the right conclusions and not just take for granted what a political campaign is saying to them.
Yeah. Well, I think people are finding this political system pretty abhorrent right now. You know, I think there was a lot of time of my life where it really was kind of, you know, politics was very a secondary thing. People might bring it up, but it wasn't. It didn't pervade the conversation. It wasn't the first thing you went to. It wasn't driving people's emotions necessarily. But, you know, they say in family get-togethers, you know, politics never a great idea. Politics and religion
right.
You know, yeah, so you don't want to talk about that at a job interview. But it just feels like now it is just front and center with everybody. And I ascribe it to the fact that things have gotten so difficult for people that it's just gotten into their life. They can't avoid it now, and they're looking for some relief and to try to figure out a different way.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously an organization such as we are, a lot of the conversations I have with people obviously do revolve, you know, or around issues. Mostly
financial.
Mostly policy issues, right? It's not generally around political candidates on a daily basis. It's really about the issues and policies, you know, whether they're local, federal, or state. But what I do notice is a big change I've noticed, I think, really over the last couple of years, and I think COVID, you know, exacerbated this in a good way, that people want to talk. They're sizing you up before they have that conversation with you. And it's like looking at you, are you on my philosophical team? Not my political team, not my partisan team, but my philosophical team. And I notice more conversations around that, you know, and people wanting to talk further about where people actually value certain things on the policy side. And I think people are really trending in that direction more. At least it's what I see. You know, I can only speak from personal experience, but I have a lot of conversations with people. So,
yeah.
So, interesting.
Well, I think as things get worse, people are going to have to start thinking differently than they have before to some degree. I'm concerned that we may come to some potentially we could come to some worse conclusions. You know, the problem that seems to have been over the years is, you know, as things get tough, people start to ask the government for more and more help. You know what I mean? And not understanding how the government many times causes these problems here. You know, we've got a state of Mississippi where we do have a pretty high level of poverty, and still really recognizing the barriers to making people more included into a thriving economy through reducing a bunch of, you know, regulations and those kinds of things. We instead look at those people who are on the lower rungs and say, well, we need to give them something. We need the government to step in and help these people get health care. We need to help them get social assistance. We need to do these things instead of realizing, no, we need to untangle this whole ball that's been created here. So as things get tougher, and I think we're going to at the beginning of a very bad economic cycle, we probably have one or two ways to go. Either people are going to understand that this mess has been created for us and we need to detangle the institutions that created this mess, or we're going to say these institutions need to come save us.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think for people who are out there right now because of inflation struggling, I mean, and it's pretty, I mean, look, everybody's impacted in some way or another.
Yeah.
I don't care about your economic status. You're impacted by inflation. And so I think as those individuals who maybe aren't, you know, completely in that fold of the government assistance in more than a safety net, right? Look, safety nets are good things. You know, bad things can happen to good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, occasionally those safety nets, you know, are something that are important. You know, a lot of us are one, you know, crisis or disaster away from that in society. And those safety nets being in place are good there. But there need to be solutions and community-based solutions, bottom-up solutions, not solutions that come that everything is like, okay, well, it's the government now that needs to step in and take care of this.
Again.
And a lot of times what I really think happens is we create these perverse incentives.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, incentives matter in people's lives, and we're all incentivized by different things, you know. But at the end of the day, the concept of coming down to the incentive of how you have your own economic prosperity and happiness that can lead to is often just gets messed up because there's this shiny object over here that says, don't, you know, don't live a life of prosperity. Don't live a life of meaning. You know, it doesn't tell you to do that. It's an easy life, but in many ways, the problem is the paradigm that needs to shift there is it's not an easy life. It is not a happy life. Living in poverty and just staying in this,
yes,
this generational poverty now. I mean, look, you know, I was gone for 35 years, you know, and came back. And so I've got a few years under my belt, but I now can see the generational poverty. I've lived long enough to see a generation.
Yeah, it's become so normalized.
Yeah, so normalized.
It's a shame.
Yeah. And, you know, and you sometimes talk to people and it's just, they see no way out. They see no hope or whatever, because there's that one message of, hey, we're the government. We're here to help you. And we're going to take care of you, right?
And that's
the scary piece. So, you know, I think for our organization, having a different paradigm, right, and shifting that is something that we work really hard to do around the country. And, you know, this thing about inflation, we've talked about it so many times over the last, you know, couple of months here on the show, is that what we've always said is people don't understand what inflation is.
No.
And so the problem is again, what with our True Cost campaign, one of the things we've tried to do, not only do some good in the community, but to really shift that paradigm and get that message out there. And frankly, between the media, between the cities we've been in, the people, you know, and, you know, there's hundreds of people at each one of these events.
Yeah.
And we're doing sometimes two, you know, a couple a day, and we're all over the country. We've been with our, you know, you see our truck driving down the highway, our little van behind it, and our staff and volunteers they're coming out and talking to people and having these conversations.
These are when you do the gas station things.
Yeah, like we did in Forest, right?
Yeah.
And when you see the stories and the videos of why people lining up, people are wising up because some of them are sharing stories. You know, I mean, look, when we were in Forest, there was a guy and he was in his truck and wife was driving. And, you know, he basically said to us, what we need is a new president. And
yeah.
So, you know, that's to solve it. Now, that's, you know, that's a short kind of we can get a chuckle out of that. But the mindset of in talking with him further is that he understands that inflation, he finally is waking up and understanding that inflation is being caused by the policies of the Biden administration. And now that he understands that, regretfully, you know, that.
But do they understand it outside of that two-party thing? I mean,
yeah.
Because this is, you know, this inflation was not created in the last 18 months.
Of course.
You know, it is decades in the making, but it's particularly in the last 2 years, the last year of the Trump administration and the first year of the Biden administration really laid the groundwork
to accelerate
for what we see right now. And,
yeah.
You know, and this really is one of my fears is that you don't. You cannot change political parties at this point and address inflation. You need to, whatever political party's in charge, drive their policies away from things that are inflationary, which
right.
is printing money and spending money and growing the size of government. We will never solve this problem if we believe it was just created by a letter or, you know, behind somebody's name.
Well, and, you know, one of the worst culprits of that, of just, you know, wasteful spending is corporate welfare.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, subsidies and subsidy. You know, people, I was reading something this morning on social media, and I thought, like, wow, this sounds really great, until I dug a little deeper into the fact that the program is a taxpayer subsidy. And I'm saying to myself, you know, if these people have a good product, if these people have a good thing,
yeah.
why not just, you know, just enter the market and go for it, right? Why does the government, you know, because it's not, you know, a lot of people like to use the word, it's not fair. Well, subsidies are not fair. They're not fair to the other small businesses or entities out there.
Absolutely.
That you're competing with. And so I think that's another area. And we get I see we get caught up in it a good bit here in the state.
Well, I was doing a story yesterday, I think it was, and we're looking, they've just, I think they're about to place their first orders for the F-35 fighter jets. It's, I believe, it's already over $1 trillion that they've spent over 30 years, 20 years, something like that, developing this thing. They have a whole lot of hiccups along the way. This is a Lockheed Martin product, I believe. I'm almost positive. Lockheed didn't go out and create a great fighter jet and then come to the government and say, hey, look what we've created here. I bet y'all want to buy these. They're great. No, the government funded the $1 trillion worth of R&D and testing and design and development. Now Lockheed Martin is selling them to the government for over $100 million a plane.
Yeah.
This is every bit of that is inflationary as well. You know, with the military budget, they just got the Pentagon just got $58 billion more than they even requested, because both parties were just tripping over themselves to try to get more money funded to, you know, the defense industries and the and that machine. That is also inflationary. All and if this ever clicks with people, you know, maybe people would stop cheering for some of the things on the right and the left when they go to these rallies. And they hear somebody say, I'm going to boost this budget for education, or I'm going to boost this budget for military spending, or I'm going to boost this budget. If they heard that, like, I'm going to continue inflation by spending more money and growing this thing. If people heard that the right way, maybe they'd start, these politicians would start getting some boos rather than rounds of applause, because what inflation is right now, it's the tax that all of us are paying for all of the things that have been done up to this point that they convinced us they didn't need to tax us for. They could just print the money or borrow it or go a little bit into debt. Right. No, we are now paying those taxes. And Republicans, you know, I am all for, I'm for zero income taxes. Republicans are great about tax cuts, but if you don't do the spending cuts, you're now paying that money back. All those tax cuts you got, you're paying it back now. We're going to be taxed to pay for these things one way or the other. Inflation is the way they're doing it now.
Yeah, well, one of the things our Torchbearers Club is doing in Jackson is we're going to be, you know, we're incorporating some reading material and some studies into that, so that is part of our education piece in that. And so we're going to be reading Bastiat's The Law.
So
I'm all about taxation is theft, right?
Yes, amen.
And, you know, and that political plunder, as I call it. But so I think hopefully what people start to understand is how that all works, right? It's understanding, like, you're paying taxes and you're paying it here, there, and everywhere, and it's going into this pot, wherever it is at the state, you know, the local, state, you know, however that goes back and forth level. It's going into the federal piece. You know, look, in Mississippi, we need to repeal our personal income tax.
Yep.
And we're
going to penalizing.
We're going to continue to support that as an organization. And I look forward to the day that it's gone. You can make it happen, and it can have positive impacts on that. But the legislature is going to have to come together, and they're going to have to say, hey, we're done with this, and we want to eliminate it, and not with tax swaps,
right?
And not with, you know, going over here and taking some
revenue
taxes
neutral
away and leaving some here and reapportioning things and then spending somewhere else. Like it's that's not how we eliminate an income tax. Right? Let's just go away. Okay,
yeah, so exactly.
It should be a simple matter to some extent. Now, look, the government does have some legitimate reasons, okay, to collect some tax, some monies, or to have
some money,
some money. Yep. Okay,
there's ways to do it that are legal, you know, constitutional,
right.
And
when you read Bastiat's The Law, right? Like, one of the things, you know, we talk about, like, so security, you know, the common good, but and there's a lot of things around that too. If we didn't have so much government intervention in some of that, would we actually, you know, would the order of the individual just kind of naturally occur, right? So I think there's a lot we have to look at there in terms of what is the proper role of government. And I think that's some of the things we're going to be talking about in our Torchbearers Clubs, not only in Jackson, but we start the newer ones, which will probably be started up in Meridian in the fall, hope to get Vicksburg in this year, and possibly a couple of other locations. So I, you know, my thought process is educated constituents are going to make educated votes.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing. And so, you know, we want to be in these communities, and we've got some people out there too, I think, who want to see some changes in the government. I really do. I think they want to see those changes. And we want to have their backs. Like, I want to be able to thank the people who step up and, you know, sometimes we're just all about holding people accountable, and we should. All of our elected officials at every level should be held accountable because they are our representatives, and you are their constituent, and you should have that voice, and you should be able to have that conversation with them in a civil way. But the matter of fact is this, is that sometimes people just don't understand the votes they're taking.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Or things just – good policy just doesn't get out of a committee and get to a vote, and it just doesn't get passed. And so we want to be able to give people that voice and be able to understand what they're talking about so they can sit down and have a really good conversation across the desk.
I think what you need to start doing is you need to start doing some dancing TikTok educational videos. That's apparently where the people are these days.
Well,
so you need to get on the TikToks.
You know what? Stone Clanton is part of his world organization and mine are our communications and our social media. So he has mentioned that, and I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So he's probably listening today, and if he's not, when I get back to the office, I'll definitely mention that to him. But
he's young and hip. He knows where it's
that's
at.
That's right.
That TikTok,
much more than me. So
yeah, that's right. All right. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll be right back in a second. Find out what they're up to next, how you can get involved.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we're talking to Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. Starla, what you got coming up next?
Well, so next Thursday, the 28th, we're taking our team and a group of volunteers out to the Neshoba County Fair. When I was I'm going to say preteen, actually, I guess, into teenage years, used to spend some time there. Family member had a house, and so spent some time. But it's been a long time since I've been. But we've got some. Wonderful people coming out. Join us if you want to meet a former Ole Miss cheerleader in my family. Come on out. She'll be there volunteering. And we're actually have a wonderful thing that people can do. They can take their cell phone out, hit a QR code, and share their opinion with us and help us kind of survey where some issues that might be important to people and kind of give them a voice to say, like, here's some things we'd love to talk about or see you guys look at. And so we'll be out at the fair. We've got a fan for everybody because, it's hot, but that's a tradition, right? So come get your AFP fan and we'll be there early in the morning. We're going to get out there first thing in the morning. We'll be there for the majority of the day and kind of roaming around the fairgrounds there and at the square for all the political speeches. So
next year will actually be the big dog year. The next year is our election year for the state of Mississippi. So next year it'll definitely be on fire up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of speakers lined up. You can go, you can go to the fairgrounds. You know, they obviously, the Neshoba County Fair has a website and you can look at the agenda and stuff. But they've got a pretty big lineup on Thursday. We've got a lot of our statewide elected officials. So come on out and hear those speeches and, be able to see them. And you can't miss us. We'll all be in our green, very bright green AFP t-shirt. So come and say hello to the team and come by and grab a fan, take a survey and say hello. And if you want to get involved, we'll be happy to chat with you. And then coming up again on August 2nd, which will be that first Tuesday of the month, we have our Torchbearers meeting in the Ridgeland office. And we're going to we're going to be talking about a couple of different things this week, but we are going to focus from a policy standpoint on foundational education, that K-12 sphere, and kind of talk about the not reforms that are needed there, but the truly transformation, a real paradigm shift that needs to happen in K-12 education.
Tinkering is not really going to get it done.
Well, and we've talked some about this, but there's that sort of supply side and the revenue side to education. And in both of those areas, we want to see families have the opportunity to make the choices that fit their unique needs for their students.
Yeah.
And so that's something we're going to talk about. So we're going to share a little bit about our point of view and talk through that. And I think we have a coalition we're putting together around that. So we're hoping to kind of educate people about education.
I just would think that would be just one of the biggest issues, because I guarantee you, if you went to to some of the failing schools in Jackson or wherever else, and I'm a graduate of Jackson Public Schools, I don't know, they can put out a good product, but they're not known for their massive achievements right now, and some of the other smaller districts around the country. If you just went into a into a meeting or into a football game or something like that and started talking to these parents. Hey, are you satisfied with the education your kids are getting? You think it's really, you know, preparing them for the future? 80% would probably say, no, I wish I could do something better for my children.
Right.
You know, they might like their school, but maybe want to change some things. But I just can't believe many people are satisfied. So it seems like a big issue to drive some change.
Yeah.
And
well,
needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, on Saturday, another key piece, our sister partner is going to be making phone calls into other states. And so if you're interested in helping out some of our neighboring states, but also some states around the country that are going to be having those primaries coming up, they're going to be working in our office Saturday from 9 to 12. Come on out, probably do a little lunch around 12 or go out to lunch afterwards. But if you can also do this from the comfort of your own home. So if you want to get in touch with us, but our office is at 795 Woodlands Parkway. So it's 795 Woodlands Parkway. We're on the first floor in Suite 100. Come on out Saturday between 9 and 12. Even if you can just give an hour, you want to stay the whole time, we'll connect you and show you how our technology works and how you can do that. And we're going to be we've got several states, Tennessee, Missouri, Ohio, Florida. We've got some places there for people if they have an interest. Up and down the you know, the different levels of government. So anybody wants to come out for that, come on out and join us. And if you can't come out, you can get in touch with Stone Clanton or myself at the office, and we can set you up to do that from home. You can sit back in your lazy boy and volunteer and actually have an impact and talk to voters.
So that's what it takes. All right, we're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Stick around, we'll be right back.
This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and we're here with Starla Brown from Americans for Prosperity. Starla, what else is going on with your organization?
Hi there. So,
I'm gonna give you a microphone. Okay,
that's good. I was gonna yell over, but I think this will work better. So, so really, right now we're out in the community talking to a lot of leaders across different organizations, and we're talking with activists, and really just expanding our footprint in the state. I mean, that's a lot of what we're doing in terms of grassroots and. You know, having some good conversations, though. I have to say there's a lot of people out there who are interested in engaging, getting involved. And I see us as being a not only the vehicle for them to jump in and do that on the grassroots side, but also an organization that values the education piece for them. Right. You know, we don't want people to just say, like, you know, I know this is bad and I think it's bad and I probably shouldn't support it, or I should support it because it's really good. We want them to know why,
yes.
Right? We want them to know why and how that impacts their life. And, you know, we talked about that at the last Torchbearers meeting, the kickoff. I kind of shared that, like, you know, the why is so important. You know, why do we feel the way we do? And why do these pieces of policy matter? Why do they matter to me as an individual out there in the community? And you know, we talked a lot about some of the things that you know, we feel very passionate about is the law equally applying to everyone, right? It's not, you know, it's not a little carve out of a law over here to protect this group and protect that group. We need to equally apply the law for everyone, and everyone needs to have what we talk about is equal rights. And, you know, that term sometimes I think has been perverted a little bit, because there are people who use the words equal rights as long as it's just the rights of this group or the rights of that group or the rights of this individual over here. You know, the equal rights that we talk about are those that are from the Bill of Rights, right? It's you know, it's what we talked about with our four, you know, our founding fathers, and that sort of opportunity for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? That applies to everyone and the individual. And so, you know, when you start looking at policies that just carve out something for one group of people and leave other people out of the equation, and they benefit one group over another, that's not equal rights.
Yeah.
But a lot of people apply that term to that sort of mindset.
Well, the frustrating thing is, you get the Bill of Rights. We got our rights. Yeah. We leapfrogged over countries that have been around for millennia. All of a sudden, we're this economic powerhouse. And it feels like the last 100 years, we've been going backwards in doing exactly what you're talking about. It's like, you know, we got to a stage where we were so successful and we were so prosperous that a lot of that money started concentrating in some hands that started buying some of the political process and setting up the regulatory state. And it's all those things that made us move within, what, 150 years? With 150 years, the United States went from a ragtag bunch of, you know, people out in the hinterlands doing nothing to all of a sudden being the most powerful nation on earth. 125 years against countries that have been around for thousands of years. And then, you know, we're still obviously very powerful. But as far as that progress that brought everybody who wanted to, you know, put their shoulder into some work, was able to succeed in this country. And we've made that so hard for people now. I played a clip from Steve Bannon earlier where he was talking about what these millennials are up against, that they're 20% behind previous generations, their parents' generation, and what they can afford. You know, they can't get houses. They're not buying things. They're going to be this renter class because we've stacked the deck against them. And that needs to be untangled at some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the atrocities that I always look back on is this notion of equal opportunity, right? So I'm not saying that, you know, when I say the law should be applied equally to everyone, and we think about that equal rights, right, to that life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Obviously, that applies to everyone. And I don't care about your race, religion, your age, your demographics, yeah, your economic status. That applies to everyone equally. And that's, you know, I think that's a good way to look at individuals and to look at people. Everybody has potential. We just got to figure out how to unleash it. But the problem is at some point, I feel like we got to this area where equal opportunity became equal outcomes.
Oh, yeah.
And so you pervert, you perverted equal opportunity into equal outcomes. Well, we're not all the same. Each of us have different comparative advantages. Each of us have different potentials. And you know what? In many ways, when you look at foundational education, which I said we'll be talking about in our next Torchbearers meeting on August 2nd, that system of education tries to create yes, an equal outcome for everyone. And we all go into school with different comparative advantages. We all go through school with different comparative advantages. And so this mindset that we're just going to create this factory mentality of what K-12 education should look like in the United States is wrong. It's just wrong. It's not working for us.
There are a lot of people who say that's purposeful, you know, that this system was created to the great George Carlin that really right, said, you know, they want to create people who are just smart enough to run the machines, but not smart enough to, you know, really understand that that's not all they should be doing. But we've got it's almost a factory model of education for so many people now. But if there are any bright spots to COVID, a lot of people are escaping that system and finding new ways to educate their children when they couldn't depend on that brick and mortar state-funded school. And now they're doing some interesting things. And we're probably going to have a lot of kids that do find that potential because people had to explore something different. But you're right. I mean, we've got a factory farming model of education right now that's not working for a whole lot of kids. And it is heartbreaking to me to see kids that have got that kernel of light inside them. They're curious, they're interesting, you know, but they're just not given the tools to explore those things through the education system, and they find themselves, you know, repeating a cycle of poverty, underachieving what they were really capable of because they were just put into this big river that just is unstoppable through education, but it just doesn't tap into this stuff. And it is heartbreaking to me. A lot of times I saw this little girl yesterday. Brightest eyes. She was the friendliest girl in the world. I almost said to her mother, and this girl couldn't have been 8 years old, I almost said to the mother, you know, you have got a daughter that she's going to do great things in this world. You know how you can just kind of get right, this vibe up? It's like charisma from an 8-year-old child. And she wasn't especially, you know, verbal. It's just her interactions with me were so pleasant. She was so bright-eyed. She was so friendly. She was so polite. And I was just like, wow, look at the kernel in this young girl. And I think it's tamped out sometimes in our education system. It's just kind of, you know, they just get put into this rote memorization thing, and that spark disappears in a lot of these kids.
Yeah. Well, you know, that sort of that teaching to the test mentality, that loss of critical thinking skills, even coping skills, right? I mean, you know, a lot of young people right now, some of the biggest issues we have in mental health when it comes to younger generations are coping skills.
Yes.
Everybody got a trophy, but now real life sets in and you don't always win. And how do you cope with that? Because your whole life you were, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot to be said about how we shift that paradigm for sure in K-12 education. And I think for a lot of kids today, like you said, that sort of COVID sort of helped a lot of parents not only open their eyes to what their kids were learning in that public school system, but seeing what they weren't learning, right? I mean, and so I think, you know, hats off to the moms out there, you know, and I know Lindsay started a Moms for Liberty chapter here in Madison. I'm really excited. She was down in Florida at the conference and shared with us a lot of stuff down there. Our team down in Florida on our education and training team had a booth down there, and we're talking to these moms. And you know, one of the things that I'm excited about for these moms that are out there getting engaged in their communities. I mean, because you know, as one of my friends calls them, tiger moms, right?
Oh, boy, they are.
Yeah,
hardcore.
Right. They are hardcore. But you know what? You're messing with their kids, and that's an important thing. But
that's what I always. But, yeah, that's what moms should do. They are the mama bear. You don't mess with my
kids.
That's
right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I like seeing this movement because what I think it's well-rounded. Obviously, they're focused on certain things in curriculum and some different types of things. But I think they're also focused on the notion that, you know, they use a lot of the term, you know, the government is not a co-parent for my child.
Right.
And I think that's a good mindset and a good way to shift the paradigm for moms who haven't been that engaged. I think some other moms are waking up in some other communities that maybe in the past haven't even thought about it from the political standpoint. Right. And so I think what we're going to see is hopefully some more policy coming out of that, some shifts at the school boards. But hats off to the moms that are literally out there in communities across this country starting schools.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're not just going out and finding some online classes and something that looks different and better. They're literally saying, you know what? I'm so passionate about this movement. I'm going to start a school.
Yeah.
And I've had the opportunity to hear from a few of them in their stories and how they work through that. And it's amazing because they're starting out with nothing. But once they get established, if they stick with it, most of them have grown these schools and now they just continue to grow. And so, you know, hats off to those moms. And they're not just out there doing the rally cry, but they're out there actually literally starting a school and raising private funding oftentimes to support it. It has nothing to do with government funding. The government's not even funding their schools in some cases. You know, some of these are literally donor generated experiments. But you know what? It's transforming education. You know, a lot of the classical academies that are popping up, some of those they don't receive government funds. Some of them are just completely donor funded. I've witnessed some schools that are in that scenario. And so those opportunities are going to, I hope that these moms continue. I hope that people out there who are in the scenario to watch this movement, contribute to this movement, they continue to do this because it is truly a movement at this point. And, you know, when you see states like Arizona and West Virginia that have true education savings accounts, right? They've passed the laws. That money is following the student and those parents are going to have more choices. I think there's just people sitting there right now who have some startups and some more ideas.
Ready to go.
Yep. And I'm looking forward to seeing that explode across this country. So.
Yeah, I there is a fire lit there. And I've been involved with a lot of these moms groups, been gotten to know some of them. And these were not people who 2 years ago were politically active at all. They were soccer moms a lot of them were working. So they dropped their kids off at school on their way to work, and they picked them up on the way home. And I mean, I sent my kids to public school. It was like Mayberry out in Madison. You know, I had no concerns. But when this stuff started raising its head and it started getting exposed, these moms got active, and it's great.
So, well, that's the group that can really light the torch for freedom, right? They really can.
Yeah,
so.
They're making big strides. All right, we got to take one last break. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. We'll finish up on how to contact them and how to get involved with their organization. Stick around. We'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees.
so will it catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here. We're talking to Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Starla, we only got a couple minutes left. So as always, please tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, how they can get involved, what you guys got coming up that they can be a part of.
Sure. So a lot of what we're doing, you can find on Facebook at our Facebook page, Americans for Prosperity -Mississippi. You can follow us on Twitter at AFP _MS. And our Stone Clanton is our GED here in the area, who's fully engaged in all of these activities that we have going on in the I-20 corridor, if you will. So you can get in touch with Stone at sclanton, C-L-A-N-T-O-N, at AFPHQ.org. Just send him an email. Let us know you want to get involved. You can
he can contact him for people who want to go to Neshoba.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to carpool from our office, but we've got some drivers. So if you don't have transportation, let us know. We'll see what we can figure out. We've got a lot of people carpooling over for next Thursday. We're really excited about that event. We got T-shirts for you, so
I could go up to Neshoba. I could drink because you guys are going to drive. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's not exactly on the flyer, but that's up to you. So individual liberty, right?
Right.
Saturday, you want to come by our office. Even if you don't want to make some calls, you just want to come back by and check us out. It's at 795 Woodlands Parkway. We'll be there from 9 a.m. to noon. Come on by, meet Stone.
Meet the staff.
Meet the staff. Come by and just say hello. If you want to see what we do and how that looks. If you've never made phone calls before and you're kind of nervous about it, I'll show you how.
You're the OG.
We'll show you how. But we've got that coming up. And again, August 2nd, same address. We'll be starting at 6 p.m., I believe, 6 p.m. Yeah. Come have dinner with us. Come to our Torchbearers meeting.
All right. We'll be talking about that going forward. Starla Brown, Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for everybody joining us. We'll see you next time.
How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter.